Dead On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! About 2 minutes past the hour here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West by God, Virginia, or what's left of it, I might note. And I'm awfully glad to have you on board. Fascinating, fascinating program from Mark Levine in the previous hour. Thank you very kindly, Mark. Brilliant, brilliant effort, as always. Paul Waldman is a fascinating man, as is David Brock. And, you know, they've done tremendous work here with the book, McCain's Free Ride. I think that's the website. The book's actually Free Ride. And for the life of me, on its face, I don't understand why the media does what it does with John McCain. But then again, he's a Republican, so he gets a pass. Because, you know, if you asked him any tough questions or followed up or anything like that, some right-winger might start squealing about the liberal media. Oh! I love the story about his rustic cabin in the Arizona hills. That's some rustic mansion you got there, John. But, you know, the entirety of John McCain's existence is a fraud. And frankly, the only place he could ever possibly have been elected was a place like Arizona. Now, I'm not gooning on Arizonans, but that whole BS myth that has been built out there, we raised ourselves up from the bootstraps of our rugged individualism. And hooey! It's a desert. If it wasn't for all the federal water projects, it wouldn't be able to support the life that it does support because, you know, absent the water projects, it barely supports life at all. You know, scrubby little things that grow in the desert and cactuses and, yeah, I know, snakes and birds and stuff like that, but not a lot of people. So, you know, that's the only place McCain could have arisen. Because anywhere else he would have been called for the BS artist that he is. But, you know, he had a privileged life. He was a legacy admission to Annapolis, where he got by on the skin of his teeth and the reputation of his daddy and his granddaddy. By the way, you know where the McCains really come from? Here's a hint. It ain't Arizona. The McCains really come from Mississippi. No, really. He does. They do. Great-great-granddaddy McCain died fighting to make sure that Southerners could continue to own human beings with dark skin. Really. And I don't, you know, I don't hold it against people, but, you know, let's at least be honest. Because he was out the squire, being squired around somewhere, and his grandfather, and he was in Mississippi, and there was all this stuff about, you know, I fought for freedom, and nobody even called him on the fact that his ancestor didn't fought for slavery. But, you know, far be it from me to criticize the press for, you know, not doing its job. And, you know, when the press doesn't do its job, it won't be because nobody put the information out there for them. So, you know, much congratulation is due to Paul Waldman and David Brock for compiling all this information. And for the new book that's out by Cliff Schechter. Talked about that a little bit last night, and the fact that McCain called his wife the C word. Whew, nice guy. And the further revelation in the Schechter book that he's even come to fisticuffs with Rick Renzi. And this guy, and there are people out there, oh, he's a moderate. Who? Oh. You know, if that's moderate, I'd hate to see radical. But see, McCain did the McCain thing again today. You know what I mean by the McCain thing. The thing where he doesn't know the difference between Sunni and Shia. I just misstated. Tell you what, just for your own edification, listen to this and see if this is a misstatement.
View Al Qaeda in Iraq as a major threat.
It is still a major threat, though it is.
Hold on, let's get this from the top.
Do you still view Al Qaeda in Iraq as a major threat?
It is still a major threat, though it is. Certainly not as major a threat as it was, say, 15 months ago.
Certainly not an obscure sect of the Shiites all over,
no,
all,
no,
or Sunnis or anybody else. And Al-Qaeda continues to try to assert themselves in Mosul. Is that correct?
You heard it. It's not an obscure sect of the Shiites? No, John. 894th out of a class of 899 at Annapolis, and now we very well understand why it's not an obscure sect of the Shiites. Even a little bit, John. But see, it's going to be okay. He could say that, you know, he's done this 3 or 4 times now. He can do it 100 times. And it's going to be okay. Because, at least for him, you know, for normal Americans, for Americans hoping for a future for themselves, their children, their grandchildren, their, you know, undreamt of progeny, it's not going to be so good. But for John McCain, it's going to be okay, because for one reason and one reason only. Because for 8 years now, the American people have been inoculated to the idea that it's okay for the president to be an idiot. I mean, you know, a real, certifiable, go look it up in the DSM-4, idiot. I mean, okay, here, let's try one. Oh, so he can't tell the difference between Sunnis and Shias. Well, at least he doesn't say nuclear. See how it works? So he doesn't know the difference between the Sunnis and the Shia. You know, Bush didn't know who the leader of Pakistan was. He said his name was General. So what? I mean, everybody makes mistakes, right? Right. That's how it all works out. And that is how McCain hopes to slither into the White House. Standing on the shoulders of an idiot. I see. I mean, he's dumb, but he's not as dumb as Bush. I mean, this will be a step up, right? No, wrong. I mean, I think Bush actually graduated higher in his class from Yale than McCain did in his class from Annapolis. We're going down, not up. Not inspiring. So there's a lot of stuff from the grandstanding ceremony, the dog and pony show, that was the Armed Services Committee hearing today with Dave and Steve live from Capitol Hill. No, not live. Lie. Dave and Steve live from Capitol Hill. Dave Petraeus and Steve Crocker, who I noticed, but I didn't pull any sound that was really worth snagging in the long form. But I did notice that if you speed up Steven Crocker just a little bit, you know what you get? Wally Cox. Really? Because in his testimony, he was talking pretty much like this in the first place. And then to watch Lindsey Graham's man crush on Steven Crocker and Petraeus was, while you've been everywhere in the world, it's bad. You've been everywhere, it's bad. But I tell you what, if I was going to send you somewhere, Ambassador, I'd send you somewhere good, baby. No, really. Everything but the baby part was Lindsey Graham's man crush. No kidding. From my mouth to God's ear. But that's not where we're going to start the program tonight. We're going to start the program tonight by addressing something else going on in Washington, D.C. What else is going on in Washington, D.C., you ask? Well, I'll tell you. It's Lobby Week. And that means that a lot of committed, concerned, dedicated folks who really, really, really want to have a community and a state and a region fit to live in, those folks are in D.C. lobbying. You know, not the multi-million dollar lobby kind of lobbying, but the grassroots kind, where you go and you knock on doors and you earnestly tell people, please, you know, elected representatives, our employees, please, please make this stop before they kill us all. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to take just a wee second here and get the director of Appalachian Voices on the line. Her name's Mary Ann Hitt. And we're going to have a little conversation about what their strategy is and what they hope to accomplish. So stick around just for a second or two, please. Got some cool, sort of jazzy sort of stuff for you in the interim. enough of that. I don't know what's going on here. I mean, I just don't. I apologize, but I don't. Just tried to raise Mary Ann, and apparently she's tied up with Lobby Week activities. So hopefully we will hear from her at some point during the program. I'll keep an eye on the lights, and hopefully she'll ring in at some point. Let's see. So we've got to go on to some other stuff. Let's see. What do you want to do? Over at the Huffington Post. I guess this post is a couple of days old. It goes 3 days old. You want to read this. This is just fascinating. One of the people who has done the most to keep the spotlight on the Don Siegelman story in Alabama is Larissa Alexandrovna. And she has done just yeoman work in that process. In the course of doing that, she produced a posting as of the 5th of April titled, "It's Official, Alabama is the Soviet Union." I love it when I start a meme and people later just, you know, psychically pick up on it. Because that's an issue that I've been working for a long time, that we're, especially under the Bush administration, that we've gotten more Sovietized with every passing day. And more so than me, however, Larissa knows of which she speaks because she was raised in the Soviet Union. She says, "When I lived behind the Iron Curtain, my parents taught me never to talk to anyone about anything. This caveat was not restricted to the typical warning given by regular parents to their regular children about the regular concerns of everyday life. No, the lecture I got," she says, "as did so many others like me, was a sober lecture given by Soviet parents to their Soviet children who had to begin schooling in Big Brother's tactics at an early age. One wrong word could send an entire family to a work camp or prison. This was not the fear of overprotective parents or even parents who have to live in a reality of constant Amber Alerts blaring across their screen and fear that some sick lone pedophile will abduct their child in broad daylight, as so often happens in the West these days. No," she says, "this was the reality of life under the Soviet regime, knowing that everything was watched, everyone was listening, no one could be trusted, and children were often the targets for inquiry into what their parents say behind closed doors. Friends were the next best thing, which may explain what we were about to hear out of the halls of the state legislature of Alabama." And she says, "Alabama is the Soviet Union," and goes on to describe this weird shakedown going on as led by the wholly corrupt Bush administration Justice Department. She quotes a news story coming out of Alabama, which of course is where I was born and raised. And the news story says, "There is fear in the halls of the Alabama State House. Your colleagues may be wired. Somebody may be watching you. An indictment looms." After a dozen state legislators received subpoenas one day last month in a criminal investigation, an atmosphere of paranoia and anxiety has descended on the gleaming white building that houses the state legislature. Legislators are sweeping their offices for bugs, routine horse trading for votes stymied. A wary lawmaker agrees to meet a reporter only in a wide-open parking lot. After-hours get-togethers are off. The concern is a result of a long-running federal investigation into corruption within the state's system of two-year colleges that's led to some guilty pleas. Now, this shakedown has been politically motivated and politically generated by, we've gotten kind of used to stories of the dirty Justice Department, the Bush administration. And it was aimed at mostly Democrats with a token Republican just thrown in so they could say, "Well, see, we got a Republican, too." They serve those legislators, she notes, in contravention of state law that protects members of the legislature from being from any kind of action by anybody serving any papers. You just can't do it. Attempting to do so is a felony. It's a fascinating story. You should have a look at it. And she asks a poignant, pointed question. I ask again, should these U.S. attorneys not be suspended while Congress investigates so that they cannot further damage the legal system in the interim? So far, the answer is no. Let's see. Got a caller on the line. Let's go ahead and go to the phones. And the person quit. I love it. We're off to a roaring start tonight. Not a diva or anything. Not by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, you structure something and then... And that's why I don't do a real hard structure on the program, because time has taught me that every time I do, everything falls apart. Anyway, though, as I said, it's a fascinating story. And she also begins to bring in Mississippi. This is terribly interesting. At first, she says, this is with regard to Alabama. At first, I thought it too absurd to so brazenly subpoena so many Democrats in a state and by a U.S. attorney by the name of Alice Martin, already under fire for political investigations and racism. But a few days later, she says, I made some calls to people on the off chance that this was indeed going to go down, and the Democrats I called wouldn't discuss anything with me. The Republicans I called had no idea what I was talking about. She says, I spoke to another reporter for another publication and shared my concerns. However, I will leave it up to that person to recall if they heard the same thing or not prior to the subpoenas coming out in the public sphere. But in private, this person said that they had heard the same. The problem was, we were not sure if we were hearing the same thing from the same single source or not. Wow. She's not kidding. It's getting real creepy there in my native state. On my natal soil. Alabama politics has never been anything particularly savory. But it's getting worse, and it's getting worse. Why? Well, of course, because Republicans are desperate to hang on to power, and even more desperate themselves to stay out of prison. But I love I love coincidence and happenstance as it strikes me on any given day, because at the same time that I was reading Larissa's posting about the Soviet Union of Alabama, I got this in my email, and I have to share it with you, because when things dovetail, when things demand to be put together, you have to put them together. So you've got Larissa Alexandrovna writing about the Soviet state of Alabama, and roaring into my email comes a song. You'll recognize it. It's a little bit different than how you're used to hearing it, however, being as how it's mainly performed by a group called the Leningrad Cowboys, and it features backing vocals by the Red Army Choir. No kidding. No, I mean, come on. Some of those, when they're just hanging out over the plate like that, you got to swing. I mean, I was just dumbstruck by the synchronicity of it all, and that chorus, you know, the Red Army chorus doing the backing vocals. Yes, we do. Das it on ya. That was just precious. I personally think that version should become the state song of the of Alabama for as long as the Republican Party controls it. Especially with the whole vulgar boatman thing going on at the end. I always wondered what it was about boatmen in Russia that made them so vulgar. I had this mental image of them, you know, rowing down the river. All right, black stag and not pull frazzle, I can make fun. Who am I? Vulgar boatmen. You know, that's what it says they are. I gotta be careful with these attempts at humor. We will do that. I mean, you know, that's McCain. You want to talk about McCain? I personally think that talking about McCain is a pretty doggone good idea, as opposed to talking about what one of our candidates said or did that pisses us off, and God knows it's a list as long as my arm. But, you know, remember, please, you know, focus. Come on. No, quit looking at the birdie. No, never mind the squirrel or the little girl with the ice cream. Over here. Focus. Come on. Over here. Yeah, right there. Okay, stop. McCain. That hateful, violent, bigoted moron will screw this country so badly that 4 to 8 years from now, every last one of us will look back and say, oh, well, you know, George wasn't so bad. Kind of like the way we look back now and go, you know, Nixon was positively liberal compared to this bunch. Say it with me. Whomever is the Democratic nominee, I will support in November. It's easy for me to say, because I look at McCain and I know what an outright freak he is. By the way, Supreme Court Justice, God, you have no idea how that hangs in my craw to say. Supreme Court Justice Fat Tony Scalia has been running around Europe and so forth. And he addressed St. Mary's University School of Law. Told them, he's taught 3 times at St. Mary's summer program in Innsbruck, Austria. St. Mary's is in the U.S., of course. But no, Scalia went there to talk about, and of course, remember, if you go to see Fat Tony talk, don't bring your recording devices, because recording devices are not allowed.
We do not allow the recording device when the Supreme Justice, the Court Justice Scalia is speaking. You will not record him. You will not think about what he said afterward. You will only hear and agree.
He said, he talked about his doctrine of originalism, that the Constitution has to be interpreted to mean what it meant at the time that the ink was put on the parchment. Never mind the fact that that would require, you know, the people who wrote the Constitution to be fully cognizant of everything that would happen on the North American continent and around the world over the next 200 years, but that's okay because Tony Scalia is a moron. He's one of these people who's scratched his little pointy little head so much and thought so hard, you know, that the steam came out of his ears and stuff. And, well, I've done a whole bunch of thinking. I must be really smart. No, there are idiots who do a lot of thinking. And, you know, Scalia told him about how he hates the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco. And he talked about how he went hunting with his shooting gun. Says he doesn't want the Supreme Court proceedings televised because that would open the window for grandstanding. Jesus, Tony, who do you think would do the grandstanding? You ever listen to the audio of oral arguments and what a smartass he is? And he thinks that he's a maverick. You know, everybody's a maverick. Everybody wants to be James Garner 40 years ago. He's a maverick because he's parted with his conservative supporters on flag burning. Jesus, how hard is it to get flag burning right? It's political speech. It's protected. Move on. Of course, he has his defenders, one of whom is law professor Michael Arians, who said, "I think Justice Scalia has a deep belief that the idea of separation of powers is absolutely critical to the idea of liberty for all Americans, and that's an idea that Americans don't think about these days." And that's all well and good, because those are pretty words, but Antonin Scalia has about as much respect for liberty as a hog does for Sunday. For him, it's more about, you know, in enforcing political power among his political cronies. You know, go and Google up some of his speeches. I mean, the guy is crazy. I mean, it should be in a home somewhere crazy. You know, he's vulgar like McCain is. He's hateful like McCain is. And guess what that means? That means if John McCain becomes the President of the United States, he's going to do everything in his power to make sure that Scalia gets more friends on the court. Lord, God, you know, go read, you know, Scalia, after all, wanted to make sure that America kept executing mentally deficient teenagers. You there with that? You got that? Scalia is in favor of executing mentally defective teenagers. Mother. But he is. I mean, this is a guy who has opined that there is no constitutional right to be absolved from a conviction for a crime which you did not commit. Yeah, let that one sink in like rain on parched earth. This guy says that if you're charged, you know, like something out of a Kafka kind of situation, or maybe sort of, you know, the existentialism of Albert Camus. This guy says that if you're charged with a crime in the United States and you're convicted of that crime, and let's say it's murder, and let's say that the jury that's been, and it's in Texas, and the judge, you know, hang him high, and the prosecutor busts his ass, and your defense lawyer sleeps through it, which happens on more occasions than it's really anything that we want to talk about in Texas. And you're innocent, you didn't do it, it's not even close, you are not guilty, but the jury decides to send you, you know, up to Huntsville anyway. And the days pass and your appeals run out. And at the last moment, because this stuff does happen, you know, there's the Innocence Project? I forget what school runs that, but it's very, very significant. It was so significant that it got all the death sentences commuted in the state of Illinois at one point, because they have statistically proven that there are oodles, that's a highfalutin technical legal term, oodles, of people who didn't do it, who are on death row. You know, like DNA proves they didn't. So, you know, you're there on death row, you didn't do it, you've been maintaining your innocence all along, and the day is coming for you to be horizontally crucified, because, you know, if you take a good hard look at what a lethal injection apparatus looks like, it's horizontal crucifixion, it really is. And the day's coming, and all of a sudden your lawyer says, wait a minute, we've got absolute rock-hard lead pipe cinch incontrovertible proof that he or she didn't do it. You know what? You know what the answer of Antonin Scalia is to that? So, I mean, you didn't think that Dick Cheney just made that up on his own, did you? So, well, Mr. Justice Scalia, he's innocent. He doesn't deserve to die. So, well, I mean, we can't run around executing innocent people, Justice Scalia. So, well, Justice Scalia, surely to God that Constitution whose original intent you so worship, sir, surely to God that Constitution protects his right not to be killed when he's innocent. No, it doesn't. What? No, there's no constitutional right. An innocent man does not have a constitutional right not to be executed in the United States. It's not there. I mean, you know, if they wanted to say that, they could have said that. I mean, Madison was a smart guy, and all the you know, Hamilton and the Federalists and all of those guys were real smart, and if they had wanted us not to execute innocent people, they would have told us so and put it in there. Jesus! Justice Scalia! That's so elementary that they were so smart they figured they didn't have to spell it out for a bird brain like you. Now, I'm sorry, he's just going to have to die. I mean, there's no constitutional right for him not to be executed just because he didn't do it. Somebody got to die. People die every day. He can die. So, you know, all of you Hillary supporters who say that if it's Barack Obama, you'll think about voting for McCain. You do that. And by the way, all you Obama supporters who say that if it's Hillary, you'll think about voting for McCain. You do that. And just as I have spent ever so many years now hammering on the Bush voters and just, you know, reminding them, hey, your actions have consequences. Voting has consequences. It's a civic right. But when you exercise that civic right, you undertake a civic duty to do the right damn thing. Just remember, somewhere, out in one of the uncivilized capital punishment states, there is a man or a woman, or statistically speaking, there are men and there are women who are undeniably not guilty of the crime for which they will be executed. Remember that, because if in a fit of pique some Democrats vote for John McCain and put that rotten, hateful, violent, bigoted, small-minded, tiny-brained little monster in office, McCain will get to replace him a justice or two, and he'll replace him, if he could clone Antonin Scalia, he would. He would. And somewhere on some death row, some innocent man, some innocent woman will have you, disgruntled Democrat who voted for John McCain, to thank for putting an end to his or her innocent existence. Man, that's a tough one to swallow. That's enough to make me want to go out and support the Democratic nominee just to make sure that I wasn't inadvertently killing anybody with my damn vote. And, you know, that's not to mention the Iranians that are going to get, you know, death and destruction and fire from heaven and shock and awe rained on their heads. You know, little bitty Iranian babies in the cradle going to just incinerate. Because you were too pissed off to support the Democratic nominee and instead you let John McCain get into office. How nice. You know, voting has consequences. It's worth remembering. And, you know, I can't help but remember what was brought up on the program a couple of nights ago. I forget who it was that brought it up. But maybe this is all just a media creation, these disgruntled Democrats who say that, well, if it's not Hillary, I'm voting for her. If it's not Obama, I'm going to remember. You know, what do you people expect me, who was a Kucinich Edwards person, to say? Well, it's if it's Hillary or Obama, I guess I'm going to go vote for the socialist. And if it's Hillary or Obama, I guess I got to vote for McCain. You'd call me an idiot. Well, they're not running anymore, Bob. No, they're not. But I, you know, that's who I want. If I can't have what I want, I'm going to cry and gonna take my ball and go home. Ah, in regard to the Soviet, or the non-Soviet, the Russian Red Army Choir. Oh, those mast-voiced comrades. Such fine, lusty, real man voices, those. Puts a furrow in my Chris Matthews. Oh, we're going to work that side of the street this early in the program, are we? Maybe, maybe. So it's about 15 minutes before the hour. And Scalia, please. Oh, by the way, the sharp knives are out. You know who Paul Weyrich is, right? The right-wing freakazoid who fancies himself a kingmaker. Co-founder of the Moral Majority back in the day. Back in November, he endorsed Willard Romney for president. And his hair. Weyrich said, with a clear conservative vision to move America forward, he will strengthen our economy, our military, and our families. That was November. That ain't now. Because Weyrich has a new letter out, and he joins what they are calling other social conservatives. What does that mean, social conservative? What are these people? I mean, they only party on they only go to cocktail parties on days that end in Y. I mean, what the hell? Right-wing fundamentalists is what they mean. And urges McCain to reject Romney as vice president. To be clear, we all welcome anyone who has come around to the cause of life and family. However, Romney's actions as governor flatly contradict both the values widely associated with his faith. Which part? I get a planet of my own when I die part, or the magic underwear part, or the black people aren't fully human part? I don't know which part, Mr. Weyrich. As well as his pro-life and pro-traditional marriage campaign rhetoric. So they don't, now the social conservatives don't want Mitt Romney, to be vice president. What are they working on? Now they're working on the Condi vice presidency. That's been one of those that's just kind of out there and gives me the little shivers down the back of my spine. You know, the one where your grave, and somebody's walking across your grave. Email, vote for McCain. I don't think so. If supporting that Mafia Judge Scalia isn't enough to turn you cold. How about the thought that a vote for McCain is a vote to begin World War III? Could it be that the fundies really want to begin that war to bring back their lord? How obscene. You know, when Edwards quit, I got mad for a half a day, but then I regrouped and decided on my Democratic candidate. And I voted for that candidate in the primary, and I hope my party decides this time to finally listen to the voting members of that party instead of the party apparatus. We need to quit running America like an old boys' network, but I will vote for any Democrat to keep McCain away from his altar of blood, the Bush White House. Cindy. Thanks, Cindy. You get it. There are, sad to say, however, because I've seen some emails. I mean, I don't know that statistically the group is as large as the so-called professional media wants you to think it is, but you know, I've seen some of this stuff. I'll vote for McCain first, which, you know, just brings out the real not nice guy in me. Well, you know, what an ass you are. Then I'm sorry. Now there are some principled people out there who are thinking about voting for McCain just so he can go ahead and finish the job of flushing us down the toilet so that maybe Republicans will be dead forever. But you know what? While it's a viable thought, I can't agree with that, because if the Great Depression didn't kill the Republicans, what will? Like I said the other day, they were so weak during the FDR administration, they couldn't even put together a filibuster in the Senate. And that's how we wound up having Social Security. That's the only way we ever get any real progress in this country, is when we beat the Republicans into absolute submission and make them run and hide in the hills. The problem is, we don't chase after them when they run for the hills and run them to ground. We let them regroup. And they regrouped. They took some, oh my God, they took some terrible ass beatings in the 30s. You know, running Alf Landon, for God's sakes. Wendell Willkie. Opposing FDR at every turn during World War II. But they had just enough of a nucleus to stay viable. But yes, Cindy, some of them really want to begin World War III because they think that you know, the sound of nuclear bombs going off is the trumpet call for Jesus to get in the Holy Rolls and drive on down here to Earth and set everything in order. They think that mainly because they're insane. And you know what? I've got this notion that McCain does want to have a war with Iran so that he can put some sort of spiritual and philosophical and metaphysical distance between him and Bush, because he can say, I started a war with Iran and I, you know, we won it and yay me and so see, I'm better than George Bush. Because all of these, you know, all of these icky old men from the Republican Party have these, well, you know what kind of issues they have. They drive, you know, they like Hummers and stuff, and they do that for a reason. See, mine's bigger than George Bush's was, and did I tell you I'm a war hero? I'm gonna give you some straight talk about being a war hero. Where's my wife? Get Rick Renzi over here. I want to punch him around a little bit. And if you sit back for a few minutes and you realize that there's a viable possibility that this guy could be made president of the United States by some dummied up, faked up, rubed up, ginned up plebiscite on the part of the American people. Boo! Yeesh! You know, Mexico looks a little bit better every day. Of course, under the Bush administration, it's not surprising that it would, because we are a debtor nation with respect to Mexico now. You knew that, right? Yeah, sure. We owe Mexico money. I'm not going to be kind of a horse's ass or anything. They may make fun of that. Yeah, Cindy goes on and says, my God, he really has the mark of Cain in his name, doesn't he? Yes, he does. If someone thinks voting for him to finish off the Repubs is a good idea, I offer this question. Will your conscience be clear after a million more people have been slaughtered in, say, Iran? Or will it take 6 million like Hitler did? Just how much blood does it take to trigger a conscience? I'm done with illusions. I don't know about you, but I am done with illusions. And I have no illusions whatsoever about Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. I don't think either of them's going to get me that pony or that Batman utility belt that I've been wanting for so damn long. I don't think they're going to lift my family up. But I think America might begin to heal a little bit if we just stop it. Because at this point in time, if a drunk's trying to get behind the wheel, do you insist that instead of letting him drive, that you have to have, say, a world-class Formula One driver instead? No, you just want someone who's sober. You just want to keep the drunk out from behind the wheel. And the drunk is McCain. And while I would have liked to have had a real world-class president like Dennis Kucinich or John Edwards, I'll settle for Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. And I don't expect them to be world-class. I expect them to not be drunk. And with that in mind, I don't have a problem voting for either of them in November. I have a preference, I think, and I'm keeping it to myself because I'm one of the last people in the country that still has a vote to cast. Man, I've got some theories out there for how stuff shakes out. But you know what? Unless we get into some sort of a conversation about it, I'm not going to share that either because my theory sharing has been sort of blowing up in my face lately. Crystal ball's a little bit hazy. Some of the Soviet water has been draining out of the magic eight ball lately, and it keeps coming up. You know, question hazy, ask again later. So I stopped asking. So, you know, that's a place for us to start this evening. And I hope that you'll join in the conversation. Oh, bless your heart. A question coming in from Australia. Why do you wretched people always have to settle for half a lunatic at best? It sucks. It does. It does, angry architect. You have no idea how it sucks. But we live in a broken country and a political system that is so phonied up with filthy money that the best we can hope for is a, you know, sober person as opposed to a genius. It's sickening, but we're gonna get what we're gonna get, and we're down to a choice between Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and John McCain, and eventually that'll be narrowed to two people, and it'll be dead drunk versus hopefully sober. I know, that's a hell of a choice to have to make. I mean, it's the lady or the tiger. It's the Hobson's, the horse by the door, or no horse at all. Do you think that I like that? Because I really, really don't. So we'll be back. You know the phone number, 304-658-3333 on your own nickel. If you need us to pay the freight, 877-443-2366. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. And we'll be right back.
When I was a young boy, sniffed a lot of glue. Mom sent me to rehab, told me what to do. Didn't have much money, Lord picked up the tab. Made me write a love song sitting in the lawn. Now I just drink whiskey, drive around my friends, get a haircut, get a job. Tranquilized, pain's almost cured. Me and old Jack Daniels become the best of friends. We got all them Baptist guys for our sins. Know the Lord is coming south to rise again.
Second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, it is. I am me, and you are you, and this is Conversation Radio. It's a hell of a lot more conversational if I'm not the one doing all the conversating. But that's okay, because, well, see, you're getting the idea. Let's see what's going on here. Ah, okay. I think this may be our conversation for the evening, dialing in now. See if I can catch the line and find the one I need.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, is this Juanita?
Yes, it is.
Hold on just 1 minute, Juanita. I think our guest is on the line, okay? Stand by, please.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll call back.
All right. Thanks.
Coming to our reception that I had to introduce, which is
very
exciting.
Mary Ann.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is Bob. Thanks for calling
me
back.
Can you hear me all right?
I've got you just fine. You hear me okay?
I sure can.
Thank you for joining us. I'm sorry about the confusion in the timing and stuff, but I know this is a very, very busy time for you, I take it.
Well, you know, I would have called you earlier, but we are having a congressional reception right now as part of the third annual Mountaintop Removal Week in Washington, and we've had so many members of Congress come in to be recognized for supporting the Clean Water Protection Act, and I've been introducing them that I just couldn't get away to give you a call. So.
You know what? That's fine by me. If you're getting a bunch of members of Congress in who are behind the Clean Water Protection Act, truth be told, I'd rather you spent time with them than you did with me. But if you've got a couple of minutes, I'd love to talk about it.
That would be my pleasure.
Most of the people who listen to this program already know about what the Clean Water Protection Act is. What has Appalachian Voices been? What's your involvement been with trying to get support for it?
Well, overall, you know, we've got lots of people working very hard in West Virginia and Kentucky and Virginia and Tennessee to alert their neighbors to the Clean Water Protection Act being a solution to some of the problems of mountaintop removal. And so we've been partnering with them and then trying to take the message out across the country. Because obviously if you're going to pass a bill in Congress, then, you know, you've also got to have support from places like Nebraska and South Dakota and Florida and everywhere in between. So we've been traveling around the country and getting people involved, and a lot of those people are here today in Washington.
And, you know, that's and you know, people in Nebraska and South Dakota and points elsewhere, they've got an interest in clean water too, don't they? I mean, this isn't just a mountaintop removal bill, is it?
People are coming to the Week in Washington from all over the country for exactly that reason, because everybody cares about clean water, because everybody cares about justice and about people being treated fairly, about people being able to drink their water and to have healthy communities, and also because ultimately, you know, mountains are a big part of our national heritage, and it comes as a big shock to people in other places that we would actually be blowing mountains in West Virginia, Kentucky, and in Appalachia.
Well, what kind of support are you seeing for the Clean Water Protection Act right now, Marianne?
Well, we currently have 129 co-sponsors, which is the most we've ever had in the history of the legislation, and we definitely have got some new supporters on board this week. You know, we won't have the final numbers for a few days, but it's definitely growing, and we just are having this reception right now as I speak here in the Rayburn Building, and having, you know, several members of Congress come through to be acknowledged for their support and to accept an award. It's just a sign, I think, of the fact that the bill and the issue are really starting to get a lot of attention and a lot of momentum.
Well, we're big believers in recognizing people, when, especially elected representatives, when they do the right thing. Are you at liberty to mention any of the folks that have come by?
Sure, we have Representative Heath Shuler from North Carolina, Bobby Scott from Virginia, Representative Yarmuth from Kentucky, Representative Pallone from New Jersey, and Chase from Connecticut, who are a couple of the lead sponsors. I know I'm forgetting some, but you know, it's been really, you know, people from our mountain region, and then, you know, the states where mountaintop removal is taking place and beyond.
Just out of a fit of absolute shameless optimism, any chance that Ray Hall or Mollahan or Capito or any of those folks from West Virginia have signed on?
Well, I'm afraid not, but we have been paying visits to all of them and just making sure that they know that there are lots of their constituents who would like to see them change their position on the issue. And that's really what democracy is all about. You know, you can't throw up your hands and walk away because you aren't getting exactly what you want right, you know, at the moment that you want it. So, you know, that's what Congress is for, is to listen to the concerns of the people. And so we will just keep coming back until we finally pass the Clean Water Protection Act.
Well, with people who haven't signed on or have resisted signing on, do you get any kind of an explanation for it, Marianne?
Well, you know, I think that one of the biggest reasons that we hear for people not signing on is that the economic impacts on the coal fields, and that people are they are concerned that it'll lead to a loss of jobs, and I think that there's also a certain etiquette here in Congress where a lot of times people look to the local representatives on issues like this one. So, you know, we're just going around to all the different offices and explaining that, as a matter of fact, this hasn't been a big economic benefit to the area. The places where you have mountaintop removal taking place are some of the poorest counties in the country and have been that way for a long time. And, you know, if coal was gonna be such a big economic boon, you think the streets of Boone County and Logan County and Pike County, Kentucky, would be paved with gold, but we all know that's not the case. And so, really, I think, you know, what Appalachia needs is a clean energy future, and is to be part of the green economy that we all see coming down the pike, and we're hopeful we should get a lot more support for that here.
Well, tell me if I'm wrong, but where this legislation is concerned, is this the Clean Water Protection Act, is it an adjunct to the Clean Water Act?
Well, you know, the Clean Water Act initially prohibited the dumping of mining waste into streams. And what the Bush administration did when they came in was they changed some of the regulations, which they have the power to do, and basically said, you are allowed to put spill material in the stream, like if you're building a road or a bridge or something. And so they changed the definition of fill material to include mining waste as a type of fill material. And what that did was it paved the way, so to speak, for dumping mining waste in streams, claiming that it's being used as some sort of fill. And that, you know, from our point of view, has been abused greatly. We don't think that dumping mining waste into over 1,000 miles of streams is really what the spirit or the letter of the Clean Water Act really intended. So what it would do is it would go back to that original language, and it would not allow mining waste to be used as spill in the stream.
And, you said earlier that Pike County, Logan, Boone, Mingo County, West Virginia, that they're not, you know, the streets aren't paved with gold from all the prosperity that mountaintop removal brings. These are also some of the sickest places, and I mean physically ill. These are some of the sickest places in the country, too, aren't they?
Well, you know, there was just a study that came out of West Virginia University that looked at the health of people in the coal fields in those counties, not the people who work in the mines, but just the average people in the community. And they controlled for everything, you know, smoking and diet and all those other factors that might cause people to have bad health. And what they found was that, indeed, the communities where there's a lot of mountaintop removal and a lot of mining are, in fact, suffering from some tremendous health problems, and it's being published in a very respected public health journal. So it's really the first study of its kind. It definitely points out some big warning signs, and I think for members of Congress like Representative Ray Hall, you know, this will be very important that they take a look at this, because when you're literally not only damaging the environment, you're not only burying streams, but you're actually making your own constituents supporting an industry that's making your own constituents very sick. It does not bode well for the economic future of your region. I mean, I'm not sure how many new industries would want to come and relocate into an area where the water is full of heavy metals and their employees are probably going to get sick. So we're really we're really hopeful that they'll take a close look at that study because it's very important issue for their constituents.
Well, with 129 folks signed on, Mary Ann, how many do you have a benchmark? Is there a magic number of what you need for this bill to go forward?
Well, you know, in the last Congress, we had 77 total co-sponsors, and now we have 129, and we'll definitely have a lot more than that after this week is over, with 125 people here from 20 states, if you can believe that. You know, there isn't a magic number other than 218, which is half of the members of the House of Representatives, and, you know, if you get there, then you've got your vote. But usually bills start moving through the committees long before you get to that point, and so we'll just keep pressing along, but the number of supporters that we have now definitely is getting a lot of attention, and I think that's why we have so many members of Congress stopping by, because it really shows that we have a lot of support and we're very serious about passing the bill.
And I won't take up too much more of your time, because it sounds like a darn fine place to be back there. It sounds like folks are getting really excited.
If you can hear the background, but there's a lot of yelling going on, and I'm not sure. You know, you bring a bunch of people from West Virginia and Kentucky and Virginia and Tennessee to the mountains, and they're going to soup and holler. That's what we do, and we're real excited about what's happening here. And
absolutely.
Soup and holler about.
Where is the bill in a committee right now?
Yeah, the committee is called Transportation and Infrastructure, and then the subcommittee is Water Resources. And the reason that it's there is because it's the fill rule, and it's under the Clean Water Act and the Army Corps of Engineers, and that's all overseen by this Water Resources
Is Nick Rahal a ranking or leading member of the Transportation Committee?
Well, you know, he's real active on the House Resources Committee, and that's the bill is not in that committee, but he's still, you know, he is a very influential member of Congress, and he is somebody that people look to when it comes to this issue, and so he is going to be a big factor in the future of this legislation, and that's why it's important that we bring a lot of people up here to make sure he knows that the power of the people is definitely with us.
How much longer does your event go on, Mary Ann?
We had people arrive on Saturday and got some training on Sunday, and then they'll be here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and we'll be leaving Wednesday afternoon and Wednesday evening.
Is there another reception? I mean, this is the main reception, I assume. What happens tomorrow?
Tomorrow we'll have a lot more meetings scheduled with members of Congress. And, you know, because people have long drives home, they'll start to leave. So tomorrow evening, we'll all just be recovering.
Okay.
From all the work and all the excitement.
Are you working primarily on the House, or is there activity with the Senate as well?
We are having a lot of meetings with Senate offices. The bill hasn't been introduced in the Senate yet, but that's what we are hopeful about in terms of meeting with all these different Senate offices and finding somebody who will start to move forward in the Senate as well. So that's part of the plan.
Okay. Well, just as a last question, for folks who are listening, do you have a specific focus of how you would like folks who aren't there, who are listening and want to be part of the process, do you have a specific focus for how you would like them to coordinate their efforts with yours?
Well, you know, I would really love for people to call their member of Congress, even if that is somebody that they think is hopeless and never going to support the bill and never support our campaign, and I'm going to actually get that number, if you don't mind holding on just
absolutely.
One second so they know where to call.
Be happy to.
JW, do you happen to know the Capitol switchboard number off the top of your head? Capitol switchboard number, do you happen to?
202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. I've jotted it down here as well.
3121?
Yes.
So if people can call their representative and let him or her know, wherever they're listening, that they would like them to support the Clean Water Protection Act. That'll be really helpful, partly because they have just been visited by people from all over the country, and so for them to also be getting phone calls at the same time will really send the message home right now.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I hope sometime maybe I can join you guys up there for one of those. I'd love to. I love the energy that I'm hearing in the background. It sounds like an exciting place to be and an exciting time to be there. Please know that we are behind you 100% in your efforts on all of this. And thank you so much for everything that Appalachian Voices brings to the process and brings to the table. That's appvoices.org, right, Marianne?
It is, and we would love to have you. We'd love to have your listeners. We'll be up here again next year in 2009 when we have a new Congress, and we'll have a lot of work to do to get all those new and old people back on the bill. You've got to start from scratch every single time there's a new Congress. And if people can look at either appvoices.org or ilovemountains.org, and if you sign up there with your email address, then you'll get a notification once we have the dates for 2009. And we really would like to have a big showing, and we'd love to have your listeners join us.
Wonderful.
You join us. So thanks for having me.
Well, thank you, Marianne, and give my best to JW. He's a heck of a hardworking guy.
He sure is. He's a, you know, he and I are both Tennessee natives, and so we're real proud to be up here in Washington working for the mountains that we love so much.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you get back home, I'd like for us to maybe have a conversation about what's going on in Tennessee with regard to mountaintop removal, because there were some rather disturbing news out of the Tennessee State House on the issue, and I think it may be time to make them a little bit more aware, too.
Well, if that's the job in front of us, and it'd be my pleasure to talk with you anytime.
All right. Take care, Marianne, and give our best to everyone there, please.
I will do it. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye now. Marianne Hitt, Director of Appalachian Voices, appvoices.org. What you heard was something that I'm right powerfully fond of, and that is optimism. Dig that. 129 members of the House have signed off on the Clean Water Protection Act. Now, it's not 218, but you know what? It's only 89 short of that. 89 short. Sorry, this is the go do something part of the program. Area code 202-224-3121. Area code 202-224-3121. I sound like one of those automated number generators, don't I? If you can spare a long-distance phone call to call your member of Congress, be nice, but be firm. Ask them if they have signed off on the Clean Water Protection Act. If the answer is no, ask why. Ask why that representative is opposed to clean water. I mean, enough of this Bush administration BS with the clear skies and the healthy forests and all that stuff. This is not one of those dummied up, faked up, rubed up, ginned up the pieces of legislation that aims to do exactly what its name is, or aims to do what the exact opposite of what its name is. This really is about clean water, and it's about clean water for people in Arizona, it's about clean water for people in Idaho, it's about clean water for people in Michigan, and it is damn sure about clean water for people in Appalachia. Because you know what? In the eastern United States, if our water's not clean, you're downstream. We're all downstream. The Clean Water Protection Act. This shouldn't be too much of a challenge. I mean, a phone call, after all. And yeah, we're running out of some time on this Congress. But you know what? The next Congress looks like it will be manifestly stronger. You got a little extra time on your hands and you want to bug senators? Bug senators, too. Hey, Senator, why haven't you introduced the Senate version of the Clean Water Protection Act? And you can list off some of the stuff that they have done. You had time for that. How about a little time for a clean glass of water for my kids? You got time for clean water, Senator? Make time, Senator. And you know what? There's no rule that says you can't call Nick Rahal's office. If every person listening to this program called Nick Rahal's office, well, they'd know something was up. Congressman Rahal, why are you opposed to clean water? Sign on to the Clean Water Protection Act. Save your own communities. You know, Congressman Rahal does a lot of good stuff. He's done a lot of stuff with high technology in this region. And you know what? Because of the nature of the geography of Appalachia, stuff like high-speed internet and broadband is how we access the world. And he's done very good things along those lines. And he does do. I saw a thing today where he's gotten a grant for community rural health for elderly folks. Good on you, Congressman. But you know what? It's a lot easier to prevent diseases than it is to treat them. And you can do more, Congressman Rahal. You can do more for the health of the elderly in your district by signing on to the Clean Water Protection Act than any number of grants for any number of clinics. But you don't even have to choose between the two. Get the grants for the clinics and then make the clinics' jobs easier by bringing an end to the poisoning of our communities. The data in the WVU study is stunning, and the proof in the pudding that it is stunning is the fact that West Virginia state government, I mean, trying to chase down a pro-mountaintop removal legislator with a copy of that study is like chasing a vampire with a stake. Oh, well, you know, it's inconclusive. I don't believe the data contained in the report. I don't believe it. It's not the scientific methods involved. You know, I think they wrote this on a Thursday, and clearly my astrologer told me that no mountaintop removal health study that was written on anything but a Saturday can be relied on. I mean, it's trouble. There are flaws. It's flawed. It's an imperfect study. I mean, we need perfection here. Really, really. It's pathetic. Yeah, and by the way, if you think that you're not connected to mountaintop removal, go to ilovemountains.org and plug your zip code into the box right there on the main page. You might just be surprised. You might just be surprised. Because, see, your power company's not going to say, "Hey, power customer, guess what? Every time you turn your lights on, a mountain blows up in Appalachia. Don't you feel good about that?" They don't do that. "Oh, we bring you clean natural energy from clean coal technology." Ha! There's no such thing. Sign up. Sign up. You know, we need help in organizations like Coal River Mountain Watch. I tell you, you can go by crmw.net. Membership is cheap, but you'll know that you're working toward the solution. You'll know that you're doing something, that you are part of a solution. Sign up for the email alerts at appvoices.org. Sign up at ilovemountains.org. Get the alerts and pass the alerts on. You have at your fingertips the single most profound communications tool in the history of humankind. And the internet is good for stuff apart from the stuff that we most, chain letters about little kids and angels and puppies and stuff. Real information can be passed over the internet, and it can be life-changing information. So, you know, please, let's go to the phones. Oh, that quit. I got an email in about a previous topic. speaking of the U.S. as a debtor nation, consider these things that came out of today's Senate hearings. You know, the Dave and Steve lie from Capitol Hill hearings. Dig it. I mean, and I watched or listened to most of it, and yeah, I heard this stuff too. We give the Iraqis the fuel that they want for their military's rolling stock. No kidding. We give them ours. We in turn get it from the likes of Halliburton and those contractors driving those trucks from Kuwait to Baghdad on the highway of death. But yeah, Iraq, sitting on the second largest known oil reserve on the face of the planet, gets its gasoline for free from us, which you pay for and I pay for. And we don't just pay for it once, we pay for it again when we go down to the pump, when we've, you know, done the thing with the checkbook balancing. It's like, oh, shoot. Got $100 to get through the month with gasoline. And you go and you see $3.40 a gallon, you go, how am I supposed to do it? Remember, that $3.40 a gallon you're paying in gasoline is helping to make sure that one group of Shia can fight another group of Shia and get its vehicles from point A to point B. Another stat, meanwhile, the Iraqis have $40 billion on hand that they've been hoarding from the sale of their oil. And yeah, some of it was to us. I get the idea that the Bush administration walked onto this Middle Eastern carnival midway with a pocket full of cash thinking they were really going to win the Cupid doll this time. Yep, the Ripigs are definitely the smartest guys in the room. Just like, you know, and it's really all part of a set piece. Just like Antonin Scalia thinks that he's some sort of a Solon, a leading light of jurisprudence, when what he is a narcissistic, self-fascinated, over-educated fool. Jesus, his daddy was the head of the American Fascist Party, and he's on the Supreme Court of the United States. That's okay. The President of the United States, his daddy, was a Hitler financier. What the hell do we expect? But it's not fascism. Oh, hell no, it's not fascism. No, he couldn't be calling it that. Well, that should, you know, you should call it fascist. I hate America, right? Oh, yeah. Well, someone is terribly, terribly impatient. But yeah, and I think about the people who take the fuel, from the refineries in Kuwait. I think about them. Bunch of truck drivers who heard a siren song of big money for a little drive in the desert that didn't quite work out so well. Yeah. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
When I pull out a visor, they all wish me luck. It's like they always did before. With a bulletproof screen on the hood of my truck and a Bradley on my back door. I offered this prayer.
Yeah, about 25 minutes before the hour of 8 here on the East Coast. Steve Earle. Love Steve Earle. Just, he doesn't know how to do bad work. Email, I went to town today. This, again, from the Great Northwest. I went to town today, and they were changing the numbers on the Chevron sign. $3.79 a gallon regular. Everyone else will follow suit within an hour. How are we supposed to live like that? No, really, how are we supposed to live like that? But that's okay, because there are still repiglicans in the Congress who think that the Iraq war is, the Iraqcupation is some sort of, I don't know, football game where we gotta, yeah, well, we gotta win, 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 we gotta fight, 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 hoorah, rick, you know, that, yeah. And the primary cheerleader in this particular little tableau, the one waving the pom-poms the hardest, is South Carolina's Lindsey Graham.
If I could promote you to 5 stars, I would. And if I could, I don't know where to send you. You've been to every bad place there is to go, so I'd send you to a good place. Ambassador Crocker, I can't...
And I can think of a real good place to send you. No, never mind. I'm not going to do that.
I can't tell you how proud I am of both of you. And let's start this with kind of a 30,000-foot assessment. The surge, General Petraeus...
It's always about the size, isn't it?
...press was a corrective action. Is that fair to say?
That's correct, Senator.
The reason it was a corrective action is between the fall of Baghdad in January 2007, all of the trend lines were going in the wrong way. Economic stagnation, political stagnation, increased proliferation of violence.
Wait a minute. Who the hell is he talking about, Iraq or the United States? Because the economic stagnation, the political stagnation, and the increase in violence, that's not 2000. That's the United States of America 2008, there, Senator Graham. But you don't want to talk about that, do you? No. You want to wave your pom poms. Did you polish your saddle shoes today, Senator Graham?
Therefore, something had to be done. And that something was called the surge. Now, I would just ask the American people and my colleagues to evaluate fairly from January 2007 to July 2008 and see what's happened. The challenges are real, but there are things that have happened in that moment and in that period of time that need to be understood.
Wait a minute. Didn't he just say to July 2008? What's he? He got Sherman and Mr. Peabody hidden back in his office. Here, sorry to do this to you, but I just want to make sure I heard that right.
People and my colleagues to evaluate fairly from January 2007 to July 2008.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? He's not just a cheerleader. He's a magic cheerleader. He sees what's going to happen, yeah, 3 months from now. Man, them some special pom-poms.
See what's happened. The challenges are real, but there are things that have happened in that moment and in that period of time that need to be understood as being beneficial to this country, that came at a heavy price, and Al-Qaeda cannot stand the surge. If you...
Huh? I reckon I'm dense. Let's try this again. I'm going to try to... Because he might as well be reading Chaucer, because I'm just not getting it.
Bill, but there are things that have happened in that moment and in that period of time that need to be understood as being beneficial to this country that came at a heavy price, and Al-Qaeda cannot stand the surge. If you put a list of people who wanted us to leave, the number one group would be Al-Qaeda because you've been kicking them all over Iraq.
Oh, yeah. And earlier in the day, cheerleader Lindsay told a Vets for Freedom rally, yeah, that's a real group, "You want to know who wants you to come home more than anybody? Al-Qaeda, because you're kicking their ass! Hoo-ah! Rick-a-rick-a-ree, kick him in the knee. Rick-a-rick-a-rass, kick him in the other knee." This passes for statesmanship? This is where the Senate is now? Miserable little toady lick spittles like Lindsey Graham? We have to acknowledge that some good things have happened at a terrible price. Which price is that, Lindsey? Well, it was a terrible price to pay what happened to the Republicans in the Congress in 2006, but we held fast against them spineless, puny, wimpy Democrats. Jesus. Let's go to the phones.
Hey, it's Juanita.
Hey, Juanita. How are you, dear?
I'm fine. How are you?
Just not feeling very cheerleader. Just not feeling like it. I guess I didn't polish my saddle shoes this morning.
Well, you know, why does Lindsay want to send him to some place good? I thought it was good over in Iraq.
Well, you know, I didn't think of it that way. It's the happiest place on earth.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, all that surgeons just surged right into happiness.
Right. Yeah. All the chicken hawks can go over there on their vacation.
Yeah, and
downtown Baghdad.
And John McCain can go shopping in the market again,
right,
and take a new rug home to the wife.
Right.
Got you a new rug, you magic word. Yeah.
We've been robbed, Bob. We've been robbed all the time and every time, one way or the other.
I know, but the thing is, we've been robbed by the guys with the badges and the guns.
Yeah.
I'd feel a little bit better about it if it was just a common criminal, maybe, you know, feeding his kids or something. But no.
Yeah.
We're getting robbed by Hood and Robins, you know, because that's backwards Robin Hood.
Well, did you hear about the little incident down here in Polk County in Florida?
Oh, I'm almost afraid to ask.
What? About the school kids, school girls. I think it was a gang of eight.
No, tell me.
Middle school.
Do I need a good strong belt of bourbon before I get this one or something?
Well, they had it filmed because they wanted to put it on YouTube. They trapped a girl in a room and beat her up and filmed it. Isn't that what our leaders are telling us we're supposed to act?
Yeah, well, that's not torture or nothing.
No.
We don't torture.
No, she just got a damaged eye and a damaged ear and a bunch of knocks all over. Of course it's not torture.
Greatest country in the world. Let's all sing.
Mm-hmm.
Lord, anything?
Well, they're only following the leader.
You know what? That's true. I mean, all those years that we had to listen to the likes of Neil Bortz and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity,
yeah,
and all those other creepy people saying that we were going to have a teenage sexual explosion in America because of Bill Clinton. You know, they established that. They established that trend, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, nobody ever did those things before that.
Yeah. But, I mean, if the president causes children to do what children do,
yep,
in cases of sex, then the president must also cause the children to do what children do in cases of violence. It just follows, doesn't it?
Well, sometimes it includes both, doesn't it? And somewhere else they...
And these were cheerleaders?
A bunch of eighth graders or nine-year-olds were going to kill their teacher.
But these were cheerleaders?
I don't know about cheerleaders.
I'm looking in the chat room, and somebody's saying that, they were cheerleaders.
Oh, it could be. Yeah, I see it now. It's on the Internet. Yeah. Yeah. says she's recovering from the beating. Gosh. Yeah, that's about 15 miles from me.
Golly, Ned.
16 years old. And then we had, like, the 9-year-olds that were going to kill their teacher. They had a broken knife, and I don't know what all they had.
You know, I remember when I got taken to task as a kid, and you may have heard this somewhere along the way, too, Juanita.
Yeah.
But there was a cute, stupid little lyric that we used to sing to the tune of the Battle Hymn of the Republic. And it was, "Mine eyes have seen the glory of the burning of the school. They have bought a, we expect to hang the principal tomorrow afternoon in the basement of the school." You know, and my parents caught me one and said, "I don't want to hear that anymore." Okay,
yeah.
And, you know, they didn't. But now, it ain't singing, it's doing.
Yeah. Well, it's just like college pranks.
The torture at Abu Ghraib. Yeah, this is nothing more than a fraternity prank.
Right. It's fine.
Well, you know, I'm sure that junkie that's on the air, Flush Flimball, I'm sure he'd blame it on liberals. My friends, this is a function of our liberal permissive society. If we had traditional family values, this would never have happened.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah. Oh, well. You know, another day in the Bush paradise.
And you know that it's going on more and more.
But, well, see, I'm being a little bit of a smart aleck about this, and I shouldn't, Juanita, because this is tragic.
I am too.
And it's tragic, and it is symptomatic of life in a fascist society.
Right. I don't see how anybody could be shocked. You know, because there's no telling. There's probably worse than that going on.
There's probably lots worse than that going on. But dear God, well, and I've got a story that kind of dovetails into, so I think maybe that's the next place we go.
Okay.
Juanita, you doing all right?
Well, I got a little reprieve, I think, and I rode home. Oh, first time I ever rode home in the back of the sheriff's department's car.
Yeah.
And met a really nice patrolman. Sheriff deputy. We have a sheriff out here. And I was driving the vehicle, and it died on me. And I got it. I coasted into this parking lot, and it was partially out in the road, and it was getting dark. And I was trying to push it, and finally a sheriff department car came by. I had a bunch of groceries. He was so sweet. I really met a really nice one.
You must have been some kind of flustered.
But he was... He brought me home, too. And, yeah, so now I don't have a vehicle. And I'm thinking about it might be a good thing.
Dear me. Well, hang in there, Juanita.
All the insurance and all that junk. I tell you. But anyway, I thought he was really very nice. Now, we've got one out, one that looks like Putin. And he never smiles.
Well, mercy.
I don't know if he's a can of Putin or not, but I wouldn't want to be under his
belt. No.
Well, listen, I'll let you go.
All right, you take care, Juanita. Thanks.
And you're stupendous.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, bye.
Bye bye.
Bless her heart. Oh, let's keep it rolling. Welcome to the program,
Bob, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
Oh, fine. Hey, I can see this stuff happening all over the country because, you know, the thing is, you have to understand, this is a survival mechanism for these kids. It's either the kids have become more predatory because we're living in such a era where it's kill or be killed.
The story I'm looking at from the AP says 8 Polk County teenagers are accused of beating up another teen so they could make a video to post on the Internet. Authorities say 16-year-old Victoria Lindsay was attacked on March 30th by 6 teenage girls when she arrived at a friend's home. One of the girls knocked her unconscious. How is it? I mean,
30 years of right wing rule. You know, this is the result. People are more predatory, and it's trickling down to our kids. Before, it used to be in private corporations, but now it's going into the schools, and I see it every day.
Life in a fascist country.
Yeah.
The strong dominate the weak and beat the weak and kill the weak. And you know, that's what makes you a great nation.
Yeah.
That's us now, Kevin.
Yeah. Well, you think our foreign policy is any better?
No, our foreign policy is the same thing.
Yeah. Look at Haiti. The former leader, Aristide, was nearly forced to basically say he cannot come within the hemisphere.
Jesus.
Well, what has Haiti done to them? First of all, what can Haiti do to you?
Haiti is one of the most pathetic places on earth.
Just throw a coconut at the president? What?
No, yeah, but see, no, Haiti's crime was being weak.
Yeah.
Iraq's crime was being weak. If we take as given, and that's not to say that I am, but just for the sake of argument, Kevin, if we take as given the idea that Iran wants nuclear weapons, is there any is there any wonder as to why? If you were Iran and you were looking at Iraq, wouldn't you want nuclear weapons?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why most third world countries want a nuclear bomb, to protect them from the United States.
Yeah, not to protect them from their... Well, okay, India and Pakistan is a slightly different kettle of fish.
Yeah, well, those aren't really third world countries anymore.
No, and they hate each other's guts.
Yeah.
But you know, why did North Korea want a nuclear weapon?
Yeah.
Because George Bush...
provoked them.
Yeah, called them part of the tricycle of evil.
Yeah.
And was, you know, doing that saber rattling thing.
Yeah.
You know, I can't. You know, any country that George Bush has, you know, poked the sharp stick at, would be insane not to want a weapons system that they could use to hold the United States back. But see, but I guess if there's an upside, if there's a silver lining to this cloud, Kevin, it's that everybody sees now that we can't attack anybody anymore.
Oh, yeah.
We got our butts handed to us in Iraq, and they didn't even have an army.
Well, the thing is, and I keep on telling some of the right wing, you know, especially when I was out in Minnesota and Florida, you can have the biggest military-industrial complex on the planet, okay? When people are willing to commit suicide for their point, you automatically lost the game already.
You know, I sat down, and this is going to seem kind of silly, but I think that there's a point to it. I figured the kids were old enough that we've been playing a lot of board games, and they're old enough now, and they enjoy it. And I looked at them the other night, and I said, kids, we're going to take it to another level. We're playing Risk.
Oh.
And, you know, you learn some pretty strong lessons pretty doggone quick.
Oh, yeah.
Playing that game. And it's a game of domination, and it's a game of, you know, sort of simulated violence. And they caught on real quick, Kevin. They caught on real quick.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and it was. It was, you know, if you see where somebody's weak, you attack them, and you destroy them.
Yeah.
And you don't play at diplomacy. This, you know, sometimes I think that we're dealing with an administration and a bunch of thugs, really, who think that there's nothing more to the world than a risk board. But the funny thing is, you can have a whole bunch of armies massed against a relative few armies,
yeah.
And you start rolling the dice, and you can start losing people.
Oh yeah.
And there's a rule of thumb in that game that says attacking from one country into another, if you don't have twice the number of armies attacking that they have defending, that your odds aren't very good. And you know what? When we attacked Iraq, we didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking, these people are stupid, Kevin.
Well, they think, well, the thing is, the war wasn't meant to be won. It was meant to be sustained.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, and it's the same thing in Vietnam. The war wasn't meant to be won. It was meant to be sustained.
No, well, no, that's, you know, they're going to be greeted as liberators. They'll strew candy and flowers. And
oh, well, that was to, you know, to get us.
No, they really believe that. I mean, there's that audio out there. I don't have time to go and find it right now, of Donald Rumsfeld testifying and saying, you know, well, it'll take 6 days.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps
oh,
six
I remember
weeks.
That.
I doubt it'll take 6 months.
Well, I said this from day one to a bunch of right-wingers, believe it or not, here in New York, but we have them too, that we're going to bite off more Iraq than we can chew. And we're going to be paying it for generations to come.
But the thing is, the first bite we took of Iraq was more than we could chew. And it, oh Lord. And still today we get senators sitting around talking. Well, I mean, you heard Lindsey Graham there.
Well, South Carolina. What is in South Carolina? Look at the big industries in South Carolina. And why do you think a lot of the military industrial complexes go to states that are these right to work states? Because if God forbid. Lindsey Graham says, look, I want our boys out of South Carolina. Okay, fine. Guess what? McDonnell Douglas and a couple Army bases are going to move out of South Carolina, and there's nothing in South Carolina.
And yet we get a pretty good idea of how these people are because, you know, what was it? Last night I had the soundbite from the North Carolina, again, you know, up to their eyeballs. In military industrial complex, and this guy couldn't get into the gym at 5 a.m. in one of Saddam's palaces while he was on a taxpayer funded trip to Iraq, and he refers to the soldier who was on guard duty as a 2-bit security guard.
Oh yeah.
I know. Hard to stomach, isn't it?
Yeah. The sad thing is. And if you remember, like, about 4 years ago when Rumsfeld was in, he purposely moved bases out from New England, from Maine, from Connecticut, and relocated them into Republican strongholds.
Yeah, the reconfederizing of the United States military base structure. I remember it very well. Nice bunch.
Yeah, most of the base closings were happening in the Northern states and in the West Coast.
Oh, yeah. They wanted to get our little Air Guard C-130 post and transfer it down to an outfit either in North Carolina or South Carolina that couldn't figure out which end of the plane flew.
Oh, yeah. Where's Blackwater located again? In North Carolina?
Yeah, that'd be North Carolina. That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a feeling I'm going to play the audio of this beating just to see what it sounds like. I should probably wait till after the program, but I like, you know, misery loves company, and I like to have people share this stuff with me.
I mean, I already put my money on, even though I don't like it. McCain is going to be Bush number 3.
Oh,
yeah.
I can't stand the thought.
But
I don't have the wherewithal to bug out of the country, and I cannot stand the thought, Kevin.
I already told people the fix is already in.
Well, see, you're not the only one. I mean, I'm sure there's somebody. I've got listeners who say, you know, go vote, do what you're going to do, but it's already all been decided.
Oh yeah.
And after 2000 and 2004, how in the world are we not supposed to feel that way?
Yeah.
But if but if we stay home, we just make that a self-fulfilling prophecy, don't we?
Yeah, well, I know I'm going to wake up and vote for whichever Democrat, even if it's a dead man, like in Missouri.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good for you. We need more people thinking like you. Do you see, backing up just a minute, Kevin, do you see violence on this level with the kids you're dealing with?
Oh, yeah. I've been attacked.
Jesus, you haven't even been doing that this long.
Huh?
You haven't even been doing this that long.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything. And, you see, the thing is, you got to understand, in many of the states, the kids have had so many rights and no responsibilities. They're so empowered now. And you don't understand what that's all designed to do is to break the teachers' union.
Is that what this is about?
Yeah. The kids are so empowered now, and they have no responsibilities. They answer to no charges. And a lot of it is to break the teachers' union, because that's the only union left in this country with some kind of teeth.
Man. Holy cow. Kevin, have a good night, my friend.
Okay. You know, I just want to put some reality.
We're reality-based, and, you know, so sometimes it just jumps up in your face, doesn't it?
Yeah. All right, then.
All right, take care. Bye now.
Okay. Bye.
Our buddy Kevin calling from Brooklyn. Now, we'll take a little break. It's more or less the top of the hour. A little musical interlude sent in by our chat room moderator, ELO. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
What's the world coming to? What they say isn't true. You can't plant no seed where there's only greed. I can walk anywhere. I can walk anytime. But the long highway is the only way. What's the world coming to? What's the world coming to? That's right.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Okay. Granted, it's audio from a video. And I will be hearing it for the first time, so I don't know what's in it. It may not even be worth broadcast. But this works in with something that I've been meaning to get to for a while, and it looks like I'm finally going to get to it. Because, you know, sometimes I say, you know, cutesy stuff like, you know, box seat for the apocalypse. And I don't mean the religious apocalypse. I don't mean that pre-post-millennial garbage. I mean the real one that may very well be on its way to us. I'm Bob Kincaid, by the way. This is the Head On Radio Network. A little reinvention of what talk radio means in America. A reestablishment of American dialogue. I get into these ruts and I forget that there are new listeners every blessed day here. And I just, if you're new to the program, no matter where you're listening or how you're listening, I want you to know that you are very much welcome to share your thoughts via email, via telephone, via the chat room at headonradionetwork.com, or via the fora, headonradionetwork.com. Click on forum. And there is every way humanly possible to express your opinion freely and openly. There's a blog. You know, headonradionetwork.com is a blog in and of itself. So don't be shy. Jump on in. The conversation is the important part. All right, so let's check this out and see what happens.
Yeah, this is Florida Teens. Look at this video. It's caught on tape. We were covering her face, obviously.
Oh, jeez, it's Fox.
This girl, really, 16-year-old, brutally beaten unconscious. She was lured into that house.
It was a sneak attack.
Right, it was lured into the house. This was a well-sought-out plan. There's two people on the outside as lookouts, and inside they are taping this pounding. The girl had to be brought to the hospital.
Yeah, she got a concussion. But listen, you guys, I mean, these are 16-year-old girls who lured over a classmate to a friend's house, somebody she thought was a friend's house, and they beat her up. One person had to hold the camera.
Right.
Two people stood guard outside while this was going on. And, you know, this is the age of YouTube. I don't know if girls, you're seeing more and more of this, and I don't know if girls ever used to beat.
Oh, BS. I can hear the girls screaming at each other in the background, but all you can hear in on the front end are the prattling Fox News idiots. And if I let it go on long enough, they'd say, yeah, it would become a liberal's fault. But it's not about liberals. No, you could make a very strong argument. But what it's about is, as I said, life in a nation that is way past the halfway mark of a long, tortured, sickening slide into fascism. And I have had this story around, and probably every other talker out there talked about it the day roughly that it came out. But you know me by now, I hope, well enough, and if you're new to the program and you stick with it, you'll get to know me this way. Sometimes, no matter how badly I want to get to a story, I don't get to it, and it has a way of working out. It has a way of gaining a sense of its own. And that's the story, that's the case with this story. Like I said, an Associated Press report as of April 1st. So it's in the past as opposed to, you know, Lindsey Graham, who talks about what's going to happen in the future as fact. But never mind. The Bush administration announced Tuesday, this past a week ago, that it will require states to report high school graduation rates in a uniform way instead of using a variety of methods that critics say are often based on unreliable information. Education Secretary Margaret Spellings, and she's a real winner too, by the way, announced the change at a news conference at which a report was released showing, and this is part, 17 of the nation's 50 largest cities have high school graduation rates lower than 50%. Now, how is it that you've got all these various and sundry ways of reporting graduation rates? You've got to ask yourself the first time through. Remember Clarence Page? That was his name, wasn't it? Clarence Page, Bush's first education secretary. The guy who had done all the miracles with the education system in Texas, only it turned out that it wasn't a miracle after all. It was a hell of a lot more like a nightmare, because what Page, or was it Rod Page? Rod Page, maybe. Page, I'm pretty sure the last name was Page. I'm sorry, it's not at my fingertips. But it turned out it was much more of a nightmare than it was a miracle, because what Page had done when he was running the educational the sideshow in Texas was to dummy up the numbers. Because, after all, that's all that matters is numbers. Well, that's what the Bush administration did with No Child's Behind left. After all, as the report notes, the change involves the No Child's Behind Left Act, which currently allows states to use their own methods of calculating graduation rate. It's a matter of states' rights. If, for instance, a high school has half of its students drop out before graduation, they have the state's right to declare that they were dunderheads who didn't have any business getting an education in the first place, and they don't count. States' rights are very important to me as a Republican. Which currently allows states to use their own methods of calculating graduation rates and set their own goals for improving them. Well, for instance, in Texas, we improved our graduation rates by stopping people from going to school. Our graduation rates went up dramatically. In one high school, we only had one kid graduate, but they had a 100% graduation rate. That's how we do things in Texas. The report came out from America's Promise Alliance. The lowest graduation rates are in Detroit, Indianapolis, and Cleveland, but that's not exactly good news, because that's just the lowest. Now, what does lowest mean? Well, in Detroit, which is rapidly collapsing before our very eyes, in Detroit, only 24.9% of students graduated from high school. It's less than a quarter. In other words, more than three-fourths of all students entering high school in Detroit don't finish. Indianapolis, well, they graduated 30.5%. 34.1% graduated in Cleveland, in the Municipal City School District. Now, these kinds of things mean different things to different people. For instance, if you ask a vile, hateful, ignorant right-winger like, say, Neil Bortz, he'll say that it proves that the government schools can't work. That's what he calls public schools. That's what he calls having schools that everyone can attend regardless of, you know, age, race, religion, economic availability, economic viability, you know, all that stuff. Now, they're government schools, just like in the Soviet Union, he'd tell you. And they're no good. At best, nationally. Honest to God, the national graduation rate. The national graduation rate is 70%. The national dropout number is 1.2 million. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell, who stood before the UN and said, "My friends, this is not idle speculation, this is hard evidence," and thereby started a war that has taken a great deal of ungraduated young men and women into the armed services so that they could be fed into the meat grinder that is Iraq. Colin Powell said, "When more than 1 million students a year drop out of high school, it's more than a problem, it's a catastrophe." Somebody get Colin Powell a toaster. His group, America's Promise Alliance, has announced a rigorous plan of summits in every state during the next 2 years to try to figure out ways to better prepare students for college and the workforce. Shoot. Yep, they're going to have a committee meeting on it. In fact, they're going to have 50. They're going to have 50 committee meetings. When the answer is as plain as the nose on any one of our faces. The answer lies in actually giving a damn about education. The answer lies in stopping all of this idiotic prattling about intelligent design and creationism. Just teaching science as science, philosophy as philosophy, to have a religion unit in social studies. So what? I don't care. It's okay. But you can't teach religion as science any more than you would teach science as religion. You can't teach mathematics as spelling. You can't teach spelling as geometry. God, can you imagine spelling as geometry? You'd only have two letters to spell with, X and Y, and A and B. Okay, I guess that's four. Well, C. You got to have a C to do the Pythagorean thing. Oh, shut up, Bob. The school district data came from the 2003-2004 school year. And it showed, among other things, a profound gap between the graduation rate for inner-city schools and the surrounding suburbs. Those of you who understand the code understand what we mean by inner-city schools. 81.5% of public school students in Baltimore suburbs graduate. In Baltimore's city schools, however, 34.6% graduate. A lot of this has to do, of course, with money. Oh, Repiglicans hate it when you talk about it having something to do with money. Oh, that's how it is with you liberals. You just want to throw money at a... You think if you just throw money at it, the problem will go away. Well, that's because a lot of times when you do throw money at it, the problem does go away. Because the suburbs are affluent. The suburbs are relatively well off. The suburbs have a tax base. And under the ancient theory by which we do funding, property taxes, for the most part across the country, are what funds the public school system. So on the so-called inner city, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, where, for instance, you have a lot of renters and a lot of landlords who do the property tax paying, who beat a hot path to the county commission every year that the property taxes are appraised or reassessed. It's a tenement. How dare you ask me to pray? Blah, 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 blah. And the inner city school system has no money. On the other hand, if you're living in a mansion in a gated community somewhere in the burbs, it's a little bit harder to argue that it's a grass hut. I mean, for instance, just as a for instance, and I know it happens other places, but one of the squirreliest things that just blew me away when I saw a little bit more of the world and saw how things worked, where I grew up in Alabama, every county has several school systems. There's a city school system for every city, and in those cases, those are the affluent schools. And everything that's not a city school system is part of the county school system, and those are the schools that get hind teat. High school I went to had microscopes and chemistry labs and biology labs and this and that and lots of classroom space and a relatively low student-to-teacher ratio and on and theater and drama and journalism and art and music and band and speech and football and all the, you know, all the traditional stuff. Not anywhere near any of that was present in the so-called county schools. Guess which school system had the higher graduation rate? Here in West Virginia, we think, even though there's something out there that mandates equal educational opportunity by virtue of a court decision, we still don't have it. My school system here in this county is pitiable. One county away in Kanawha, it is 1,000 times better, with 1,000 times more course offerings. Because it's all based on the assessed value of real property. But never mind the numbers and never mind the particulars. What happens to the question is, what happens to a nation where every year 1 million young people give up on learning? It's kind of like talking about the Clean Water Protection Act a little bit ago. Yeah, how can a congressman look at you and say, I'm not in favor of clean water? Because, you know, if you do that, you're stupid and you do deserve to be thrown out of office on your ear. It's similar here. How can you say it's okay for people whose brains aren't even done growing? That's a fact, too, by the way. Our brains don't stop growing till we're about 25, 26 years old, is it? They don't even, and by growing, I mean they don't finish wiring themselves. I can look back at several occasions before age 25 when it was abundantly clear that my brain was not quite done wiring itself. But how can we look at 1.2 million people a year whose brains are not done developing and say, hey, it's okay. You know, education wasn't for you in the first place. Because, see, we don't have any place for them. And what I mean by that is that we don't have the world now, for the most part, that had a meaningful existence for somebody who couldn't finish high school. That was not always the case in America. My grandfather had an eighth grade education. My mother and my father got through high school and got high school diplomas because their relatively uneducated parents made damned sure that they did, even with a war on. Because in 1943, it was becoming apparent that a high school education was the de minimis standard for being able to get through this country. But even up into the 70s, there were jobs where you could quit school at 16 and the next day start working a job that would pay you a living wage. Whether it was the auto industry in northern Ohio and Detroit, or the mills in Pittsburgh, or whether the mines in West Virginia and other Appalachia, there were places where labor's efforts to secure a decent living for people who worked hard and did their jobs well could secure for them a decent life. But we live in an America now where the unions have just about had the hide beaten off of them. And where in certain regions of this country, if you suggest joining a union, the terrified people do what terrified people do, and they, shh, don't say that. Even Walmart prefers to have people with some minimal level of education. Of course, the military's always hiring. And they've relaxed their standards so that even if you did drop out, they still think that they're still pretty sure that they can teach you to shoot a gun and go kill some brown person. Is there a pattern here? Do you see one? I do. Because after a couple of years of being out of school and having dropped out, the light begins to go on for that young, currently hardwiring brain, and they go, oh, I'm screwed. And there's a guy in a spiffy green suit with lots of sparkly stuff on him who says, son, come with me. I think about the young lady from Palestine, West Virginia, whose name constantly escapes me, who wanted to be a teacher and had no way whatsoever of being a teacher, and wound up being the victim of a humongous Pentagon fraud in a desperate attempt to find some level, some heroic story out of the early days of Iraq. Not Lindy England, the other one. And then there's Lindy England, up in the West Virginia Panhandle, who joins the Guard and winds up at Abu Ghraib with a cigarette hanging off her lip like some sort of street tough on the corner of, and, you know, pointing imaginary guns at naked Arabic men piled into pyramids and sneering and smirking. Back home in West Virginia, she had a future of either being a prison guard across the border in Maryland, or ripping the guts out of newly dead chickens for the rest of her days. Man, what a future. And it is a future that has been deliberately crafted. No? It is a future that the Republican Party has wanted all along. Think about the Great Depression. If there was some way that the Republicans could have maintained power in the Great Depression, they could have finished the job. They could have created a great gulf between rich and abjectly poor, with no middle class, no burgeoning middle class, no rising middle class in the middle of it all to get in their way. And it would have been no different than the relationship between the Spartans and their helots, or the plantation owner and their slaves. I'm particularly disgusted to hear Colin Powell, it's a catastrophe, you son of a. You're part of the machine that helped the catastrophe happen, and it wasn't an accident, Colin. It was an intentional act. And you participated. Don't get all lammy on me now. Colin, you're part of the problem. There you were, using everything, every legal, every social means available to you to climb the rungs of the ladder, and once you got to the top, you started stomping the hands below you for all you were worth. No different than Clarence Thomas.
Oh, it's a catastrophe.
You're damn right it's a catastrophe. It's a tragedy. But you're not going to be looking at any of those 1.2 million. That's not, you know, and that's not a fixed static number. That's 1.2 million people every year in the United States of America. The conservatives and the Republicans look at and say, well, that's just how it is. That's the free market. If only you'd been able to go to a Christ-centered school, maybe you'd be okay. And teachers, good teachers that I know, are out there busting it every day to get over the teachers working with one foot in a bucket because of No Child's Behind left. Trying to teach children with both feet in a bucket to run. Run, hell, just walk. Screw walk, just to crawl. And some highfalutin Republican talks about catastrophes. I remember when George Bush went down to the, what was it? It was a magnet school or a charter school or one of those, you know, one of those carnival midway operations that the Republicans are so fond of down in New Orleans to talk. And they didn't even have a damn book on the shelf. And this is an educational miracle. And they finally gotten caught. Well, this is obviously a problem with the legislation. No! It's a problem with Republicans. It's a problem with Republican politicians. It is a problem with Republican representatives. It's a problem with Republican school board members. It's a problem with Republican the state legislators. It's a problem with Republican judges. It's a problem with Republican voters. It's a problem with Republican mommies. It's a problem with Republican dads. It's a Republican problem! Meanwhile, over in the Democratic Party, I'm not going to vote if it's not my candidate. I want a pony. It's frustrating. I'm telling you, it's frustrating. I've kept someone on hold, and I feel really bad about it, but I just... Yeah, and I lost him. So how does Lakeland, Florida, and young ladies, and you know, you watch the video, and it's not like it's taking place in a shack. This is a house. The girls are clean. The girls are apparently well-fed. I'm guessing the girls probably could have stood a little corner time with a bar of Octagon soap in their mouths early on in their lives, but, you know, that's me. How the hell are we not I mean, but to have the Bush administration sitting there, oh, well, you know, this is unacceptable. Blah, 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 blah. This is what they want. This is how you get a country into a fascist dictatorship. This is how you transform a constitutional republic into a fascist dictatorship. And you know what? They're not succeeding. They have succeeded. The strong bullying the weak. The big beating on the small. All the way from the attack on the poor, poor people of Iraq and the occupation of those people's country and the theft of their natural resources, all the way downhill to a gang of cheerleaders in Lakeland, Florida. Thank you for letting me know that story, because Juanita, because that's what that's what brought all of this together. And it's not just Indianapolis, and it's not just Baltimore, and it's not just Cleveland, and it's not just Detroit. Oh, no, it goes on and on. It's cities all over this country. It's Nashville and Birmingham and Memphis. It's St. Louis and Kansas City. It's Denver. It's L.A. and Frisco and Seattle and Portland. It's Phoenix and it's Chicago. And it's city and it's country. And it is the mathematics that winds up with an equals sign. And to the right of that, the word desperation. And to the right of that, another equal sign. And to the right of that, military recruiters. Because, see, it's kind of like a double word score on a Scrabble board. Not only do you get people desperate enough to join the military, some of them get killed, and then you don't have to worry about them coming home. It's sickening. It is truly sickening. Want a little more proof? Let me see if I can find this real quick. Also out of Florida. Two stunning pieces of information. And I don't mean stunning in a good way. Stunning like a siren. According to a survey of teenagers in Florida, but if you're not in Florida, don't giggle, because this stuff is viral on the internet and it spreads real quick. According to a survey in Florida, which does not have any sort of meaningful education about biological sexual processes apart from telling young men and women, pray to Jesus and you won't do it anymore, okay? Good. A stunning, stunning number of teenagers in Florida believe, among other things, that if you smoke pot, a person won't get pregnant. You know, there may be some truth in that. Oh, like, what were we gonna do?
I think we were going to go to the White Castle.
Oh, yeah. Cool. I'm hungry. But no. Florida teens believe that if you get high, you won't get pregnant. So all you got, and you just know a guy invented that one. Oh, come on, honey. No, just smoke this first, and then you won't get pregnant, okay? Yeah. No, really, really. No, my buddy told me about it, and, like, he never lies to me, okay, you know?
Okay.
But it gets better. Because, also according to Florida teenagers, if the getting high part doesn't keep you from getting pregnant, that shot of Mountain Dew that you drink, no, really, the pop with the caffeine in it. Yeah, a good swig of Mountain Dew, that'll keep...
Wait a minute. My mouth's all dry now, but I'm afraid I could still get pregnant.
Well, here, have a drink of Mountain Dew, baby. You won't get pregnant if you have a drink of Mountain Dew.
Well, okay.
And, you know, that's just stupid. And again, you know, the captain of the football team probably invented it. But no. It gets worse. Because they also believe that drinking a cap of straight chlorine bleach will prevent HIV. Because, you see, the religion industry has kept honest discussion of sexually transmitted diseases and the sexual biological processes from taking place among the children that we manage to keep in the school system.
Abstinence only. The only way... It's the only way, abstinence.
So they have to try to figure out stuff on their own with these brains that aren't even fully developed yet. You don't want to get pregnant, honey? Make him wear a condom. You don't want to get pregnant? IUD. Pills. Sponges. And yeah, don't do it. That's one too. But it's not the only one. Can you imagine any young woman that you love or know or care about drinking a gulp of straight chlorine bleach because some miserable, godforsaken, soulless, heartless, fundamentalist, phony Christian got his hands on government and got his hands on the educational system? And people live in fear of those fundies.
Don't criticize our abstinence-only only program because God hates that and he'll send you to hell for wanting to put condoms on our children. Oh, praise Jesus.
But having found out all this stuff, the state of Florida is actually considering teaching about condoms and birth control. And yeah, HIV and herpes and gonorrhea and syphilis and genital warts and non-gonococcal urethritis. Teaching about all of it. But they're only thinking about it. and they're only thinking about it for so long as it takes the fundies to gin up some righteous indignation on the part of a bunch of idiots who themselves probably got an inadequate education to begin with. And it's Florida, and it's Arizona, and it's New York, and it's Massachusetts, and it's Illinois, and it's all over this country. That is what 8 years of George W. Bush has done to this country. Can you imagine what 4 or 8 years of John Sidney McCain and whomever he nominates as his vice president will do in terms of finishing the job? If I put you on hold, you gotta stay there for a couple of minutes. No offense, but just let me finish a thought before you hang up, okay? This is a broken, tortured, getting awfully close to hopeless country. Meanwhile, with the economy falling around his big old jug ears, George says that there's no need to worry about the economy because the stimulus checks are on the way. Bread and circuses. Let them eat cake. A number of lawmakers in the Congress are proposing another stimulus bill that would actually increase unemployment insurance, among other things, and food stamp payments, and a public works spending package. So yesterday, George is in a meeting at the White House with so-called small business owners. And he tells America what he thinks of the idea of more stimulus.
As a matter of fact, one of the things that's going to happen with this pro-growth package is that not only is it going to affect small businesses like it's affected folks here, but 130 million families are going to get some money, their own money. And, of course, the purpose of that is to help boost consumption. We're in a rough time right now. I'm confident we're going to come out of it. And when we do, we're going to be a stronger and better country. Congress, of course, is contemplating different measures. My only advice to them is, one, make sure you give the pro-growth package that was passed overwhelmingly a chance to work. Let's see what the effects are. Secondly, anything they do should not hurt the economy.
So in short, we're giving the little cockroaches $600. What do they want? Least you can do is wait until they get it in their hot little hands in May. Then they can drive the car that they're living in over to the Walmart and buy a TV that they can't watch. You want me to give more money to those people? What, are you crazy?
And thirdly, I think we ought to, in terms of pro-growth packages, I think we ought to, again, I repeat, give this one a chance to kick in.
Give it a chance to kick in. Wait. wait? How long do we wait? Your Republican buddies in the Senate, George, killed a plan that could have helped folks who were in foreclosure, in bankruptcy, save their homes. Wait. Wait. 80,000 jobs disappeared last month, George, and it's going to turn out it was closer to $120,000, 120,000 jobs by the time your the Labor Department actually quits fudging the numbers. What do we do about that, George? Wait. Wait. How long do you want us to wait, George? About January 20th would suit me just fine. What do the people who are suffering do while they're waiting? It wouldn't. I reckon they can pray. Because asking me to do anything ain't going to do any good. Maybe God will listen. Pray louder, Christian. Your God can't hear you. Wait. John McCain? Oh, well, you know, he's a maverick. He's a free thinker. He's independent. He's a straight shooter. What does he think? Well, he told George Snuffleupagus, I'm open to helping homeowners. I would rely to a large degree on the situation of time, but also to people like Secretary of the Treasury Paulson, who the financial markets and a lot of us have a great deal of faith in. If more needs to be done, I'm for doing more. Wait. 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 Just let it kick in. See, you're hungry now, but see, that's because the acid hasn't kicked in. When the acid kicks in, the walls are going to start breathing, and people are going to start growing extra appendages, and you're going to be so fascinated, you're not going to be hungry anymore. In fact, I can tell you, as a matter of fact, you can drink beer all night long. You just got to wait for it to kick in. Wait. 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 I'd actually like to see the Congress do something and put a bill on his desk and make him do to that bill what he did to children across this country with the CHIPS program. Hey, the little girl that got the snot beaten out of her in Florida. You know, if she's not insured, it's going to really suck for her parents. Maybe she could have had CHIPS if George hadn't screwed her. Wait. 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 Meanwhile, just in case you were under the impression that the really rotten stuff was only happening in the schools of places like Detroit and Cleveland and Indianapolis and so forth, Bill Scherr asks, would you close your school to pay for Iraq? He said, when General David Petraeus testifies today about the status of the Iraq occupation, I'll be thinking about my neighborhood elementary school, because the Bridge Street School in Northampton, Mass. May have to close for lack of funds. See, that really sucks a lot. When the kids who aren't quitting school get school quit on them. Because the Bridge Street School in Northampton, Mass. May have to close for lack of funds while we continue to waste billions on a failed foreign policy. My town is facing a shortfall in our school budget between $800,000 and $1 million. We are forced with a choice between closing an entire school, which doesn't even make up the entire gap, or a series of cuts across the entire school district, including teaching positions, school buses, special ed, music, and, of course, arts, and supplies. He notes that according to the Boston Globe, across Massachusetts, cities and towns face the prospect of deep cuts in what appears to be the grimmest fiscal year since 2003. Local revenue and state aid can't keep up with such rapidly rising expenses as employee health insurance, heating oil, and even street paving. Wait. 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 You know any of those people who are talking about maybe voting for McCain out of, you know, out of some peak of fifth peak because it wasn't the right their candidate? Tell them everything we've talked about tonight. Because I tell you, as sure as God made little green apples and they'll give you the turtle squirts, America cannot wait any longer. It's bad enough our Congress won't impeach this war criminal who's sitting in the White House. We cannot wait another day past January 21st, 2009. And that's where we end it tonight. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our IT professional, Peter Godbold, who is on his way with a best of program. He'll be back soon. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, on his way with All Foxed Up tonight at midnight Eastern Time. Thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, the hardest working man in liberal talk, the man who saved liberal talk. Thanks to all my courageous friends at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, for their sponsorship of what happens on this network. Go to crmw.net. Join up. Be part of the solution. And always, 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 RMR, Gina. It's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf said that parliamentary elections will take place in mid-February. That's about a month later than planned, President Bush urging Musharraf to hold the polls on time and end martial law. Emergency rule could be lifted soon in the Georgian capital of Tbilisi. Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili promised to end a 15-day state of emergency after stating that presidential elections would be held in January instead of late next year. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said today the House will vote on a $50 billion war funding bill as soon as tomorrow. The amount is about one-fourth the size President Bush has requested for the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. In northern Italy, a U.S. Black Hawk helicopter crashed this morning, killing five U.S. military personnel and injuring another six. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke told lawmakers on Capitol Hill that the U.S. economy does not appear headed for recession. In an address to the Congressional Joint Economic Committee, Bernanke cautioned that growth would be slow but positive and inflation higher. He also said that a housing slump would intensify and that consumer spending could slow. Huge petroleum reserves have just been discovered off the south shore of Brazil, according to the country's national oil company. Those reserves could produce up to 8 billion barrels of light oil and natural gas, placing Brazil in the same league as the Arab states and Venezuela.